Points hacking is the art of collecting credit card points, just like you would collect anything else. And you can use those points to either offset or greatly reduce the cost of something that you want.
I love that you call it an art. Is it an art form?
It is an art.
It sounds like you still have a very cozy relationship with credit cards.
I like
and
to
you're
win.
Trying to soften this example. It's the art. I'm an artist.
I'm talking to all the like competitive people who are listening who like to win, even if it's just you against you, baby. Like.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. Today we're talking about credit card point hacking. Is it worth it?
Is it worth it?
Is it worth it? Look, I'm looking forward to this topic because I have a complicated history with credit cards.
Ooh, air quotes, complicated.
I struggled with consumer debt. Primarily because of my relationship with credit cards. You know, I got my first one as a freshman in college and I had no idea what I was doing except swiping. So I'm excited to have this conversation because I know how enticing the rewards can be and how easily people can be seduced into more spending because of them.
It took me a few years before I realized how reward driven you are.
Oh, man.
And I'm still trying to navigate that.
You have a complicated history with my rewards?
I do. It's like I'm constantly dangling carrots or something like that just to see if we can get things done. So I say that to say I can see why credit cards would have been enticing for you. I have my own history. I don't think it's as dramatic as yours, but I do remember my first credit card, very similar. It was in college. It was a Discover card, and I thought it was so cool. But I also remember being pretty frustrated because there were some places that just did not accept Discover at the time.
Oh.
Yeah, so I got frustrated. And then I eventually upgraded to American Express because I was like, everyone takes American Express. Yeah, you know, I felt like I was balling out.
Status symbol.
It was a status symbol. And it was almost like a part of my fame. I'll get into that later. But yeah, everyone, they love American Express for some reason. It's amazing.
I mean, they had quite a bit of an ad spend back in the day.
Okay.
Like it's pretty up there. Now, if I had mentioned hacking to you back then when you had your Discover, your Intro, Amex, what would you have thought of?
So this is my college years. If you would have mentioned hacking, I certainly would not have thought like the internet hacking, or even credit card point hacking. I would have thought, hacky sacking is probably.
Oh, that little ball that people kick around?
Yeah. I never understood it, but it was a big thing back then.
It was.
Yeah. It was like the Nirvana era, I think.
Yes.
People were hacky sacking and yeah.
It's probably time for a comeback.
It'll probably be back next year.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can source
Which
some.
Is fine. We get to pick and choose some of the other things that we get to bring back as us older millennials. It's like, you know what? We're bringing back, you know.
Hacky sack
and, you know, baggy, super baggy jeans.
Anyway, let me set up the conversation because when we say points hacking, hacking is a bit of a misnomer. Like it implies that you're doing something secret or unbeknownst to the credit card companies. It's almost like sinister, but hacking in this context is more like gaming. Points hackers are great at finding and exploiting loopholes, but at this stage in the game, like industry is aware, they catch on pretty quickly, mm-hmm. and they just kind of add new rules. It's just a fun thrill to find a loophole and take advantage of it. But basically, points hacking is the art of collecting credit card points, just like you would collect anything else. And you can use those points to either offset or greatly reduce the cost of something that you want.
I love that you call it an art. Is it an art form?
It is an art.
It sounds like you still have a very cozy relationship with credit cards.
I like
and
to
you're
win.
Trying to soften this example. It's the art. I'm an artist.
I'm talking to all the like competitive people who are listening who like to win, even if it's just you against you, baby. Like,
yeah. You'll know we hit a new level if you start seeing it on ESPN and people like competitive
point hacking.
Like, oh,
that's a great idea.
That actually is a pretty cool idea.
So point hacking kind of works like any other currency. Like the value of an individual point is determined by the supply and demand in the rewards ecosystem. So this is very like fluffy language, but basically the rewards ecosystem consists of businesses, card issuers, and consumers. These are all people who are in the business of buying and selling points. So the way that we thought about it from the business side, as you guys know, Julian and I both come from a hospitality background. So the way that we thought about this on the business side, we used to call it earn and burn. So strategically, we would kind of burn the candle at both ends, and we'd create really unique ways for customers to earn points with everyday spend. So your grocery, your gas, we'd give you extra points for that stuff. And then on the flip side, we partner with really cool brands to create unique experiences to spend or burn the points. So it was always a game of like earning and burning, which doesn't sound comfortable, but...
No, it does not. But I'm actually, you know, thinking back to those days, and you're reminding me that actually a lot of the employees who are closer to these programs were actually many of like the biggest fans of the programs.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And part of it was because, you know, we were on the inside, and so we would actually know like what big rewards were coming down the pipe before they were actually released to other people. And I want to say, we had opportunities to earn points too, right? So it was almost like an employee incentive. If you were really, you know, crushing it at work, then you might be gifted, you know, a couple thousand points. And that really was part of the thing that built company morale, but also helped to create ambassadors of some of these programs. So
yes,
fun times.
So if you're not an employee of a travel company and you're just a consumer, the fastest way to earn is through bonuses. So a lot of these card issuers will offer sign-up bonuses. So if you sign up for a new card, you'll get a couple hundred thousand points if you meet a spend threshold. Or there are times of the year where they'll give you an incentive to spend with a certain merchant and you can earn bonus points that way. Anytime we're talking about spend with a credit card, it's known as churn. So that's like a point hacker term where when they're trying to figure out how to earn more points, they kind of call it churn. And there's lots of tips on Reddit if you're into Reddit about how to increase your churn. I think our personal tip is to start a business because it's very expensive and you end up buying a lot of stuff early on. There are also opportunities to earn really quickly and double or triple your earn by shopping through points malls or cashback services. So these are like websites where if you buy through them instead of going directly to like a Target or an Amazon, you will also earn a different type of currency on top of the currency that your credit card uses. And all of these currencies can be exchanged in different ways and spent on different things.
Yeah, this is really interesting. I'm like having so many flashbacks. I remember being introduced to new vendors. Most of them didn't work out, but the reason why I was willing to try it is because I knew that I could get like bonus points. And I was like, oh my gosh, we don't have to go to buy wine anymore. We can just sign up for this in the mail wine program, which I remember
was terrible.
It was some of the worst wine. It was like drinking warm
gasoline
vinegar. Oh, it was so bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me walk through an example, because I know for people who don't play with points, it can be a little overwhelming. So I'll start with a basic example. Let's say you have a card that gives you 1 point per dollar at grocery stores. So if you spend $50 on groceries, you get... Finish my sentence.
1 point.
No, you get 50 points.
50 points.
1 point per dollar. So if you spend $50, you get 50 points.
Okay, 50 points.
So if you assume that each point is worth a penny, which is about the average across all credit cards, points are typically worth a penny. You also get 50 cents for spending that $50.
Okay.
So you can either view that as a free 50 cents. So some people like to say, you know, points are free money. There's no point, pun intended, on using a debit card because you don't get these points. Or you can say like your groceries only cost you $49.50. So another way that people look at it instead of calling it free money is they look at it like a slight discount. So instead of, you know, you saying that you paid $50 for your groceries, you can assume in your mind, you can do some mental math and say it was really only $49.50 when you count the points.
Yeah, this is making me think of the movie Up in the Air with George Clooney,
yes,
which I feel like it's always on.
It is.
It's on right now.
Yeah.
Wherever you are.
I think it's just to remind people that like travel is coming back eventually. Well, it's back now. I mean,
it's definitely coming back. Yeah, it's coming back. Yeah, yeah. But no, I think about that movie because I think that was the first time that I'd ever really seen the role of credit card point hacking in a way that I could actually really relate to on a big screen. Because at the time, you and I were, you know, road warriors, you know, mm-hmm. and it was all about the points. It was all about the travel, collecting it and using it to offset future personal travel or living expenses. And so I totally understand why so many people get really jazzed up and excited about credit card point hacking. But there's more to it. So why don't we talk a little bit about travel and the industry as a whole?
Travel is an interesting industry. I'll put a link to this article in the show notes, but it's called Why the Survival of Airlines Depends on Frequent Flyer Miles, which is a wild sentence to read out loud. But this article was written at the time when airlines were applying for government relief during the shutdowns. So in order to remain solvent, the airlines started raising cash by putting up their aviation assets for collateral. In other words, if the airlines had like rights to a particular flight route, they could borrow against that route. And if they defaulted, the lender could then sell that route to a competitor. So if you're Delta and you've got the only flight to Johannesburg from Atlanta, you could actually use that as collateral with a lender, get some cash to keep your business afloat. And then if you defaulted on the loan, that lender could then sell that route to United.
That's fascinating.
Right?
It feels like a crash course on aviation.
Okay. So yes, I was fascinated by the article too. Here's where it gets really interesting. In addition to their aviation assets, the airlines also collateralize their loyalty programs, which contain tons of miles and points that are accumulated through credit card purchases. And so the Financial Times did an analysis about how big and profitable the programs were. And they discovered that they're basically a standalone business that the airlines have become dependent on.
That makes a lot of sense, because if you think back to our work experience, I remember feeling like the department that was over loyalty was its own world.
Yes.
Right. And I want to say it may have even deserved or needed to have its own president. Like, it was its own business that was like attached to the existing operations, its own sort of reporting, own metrics, own way of, to your point, of measuring currency and its value that it could tweak and manage at any point in time. So that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Like, according to the Financial Times calculations, the frequent flyer programs are actually worth more than the airlines themselves.
Wow.
So I'm going to read this one sentence from the article and then I'll move on, because this is not what this is not what today's podcast is about, but it's really interesting. So a quote from the article says, if you take away the loyalty program, Delta's real world airline operation with hundreds of planes, a world beating maintenance operation, landing rights, brand recognition, and experienced executives is worth roughly -$7 billion.
I'm in no rush to get into the aviation business. That is fascinating.
Yeah.
That's really, really fascinating. Wow. And it actually strengthens the point that a lot of people have. Like, they understand and know that there is real world value in their points. Like, your points and miles and all of those things can take you places.
Yeah. There's probably some kind of parallel here, and I'm not going to try and make it today, but between the belief in points as currency and like cryptocurrency and the belief in the value of those coins. Maybe for another episode when we start to break down what cryptocurrency is, we can piggyback off of this.
Yeah, I love that.
So the airlines prove that points are a great deal for businesses. Like, they make a ton of money and they make sense. They make dollars and they make sense. Come on now.
It's pretty predictable.
The question that we're trying to answer today is, are points a good deal for consumers?
Yeah. And by consumers, we mean you and I, people who are out here with cards, who are spending, or what did you say? Churning?
Churning.
We're churning. Okay. That makes me think of butter. Ice cream and butter.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're talking about whether or not it's worth it. Is this good for consumers? And like anything, there are pros and cons. So let's start with a pro, and it's whether or not you can save money using credit card points. And the answer is yes, absolutely. In our own experience, though, it's only really worth it if you're planning to make like large purchases, like for a renovation or like a big vacation. Like in those cases, I think you mentioned this earlier, you can treat using your points as a coupon. So if you're buying something and it's, or several things, and it's going to cost you $10,000, and you know that you earn, let's say, 1 or 1.5 or 2% back, you can treat it as a little bit of a coupon and save a couple $100 on those purchases or on that large purchase. Here's a caveat. If you're stretching the payoff period out over a long period of time, or if you're earning interest against those charges, you're kind of negating it, right? So it doesn't really make a lot of sense to save 2% or 3% if you're also being charged 3% or more over that same period. It's like, yeah, I'll earn or save a couple $100 in exchange for being charged a couple $1,000. That doesn't make a lot of sense. So it really only makes sense if you're paying off all of your charges in every single month.
Yeah, I laugh when you said 3% because it takes me back to when I was struggling with credit cards and my interest rates were way above 3%, 28, 29, 30%. Wow. Like, so yeah, comparing
those are grown adult interest rates. Yeah.
Those are adult interest rates. Wow. So comparing that to saving 1-3%, you know, saving 50 cents on groceries was far more accurate.
Yeah. I want to say my first credit card was probably in the 19 or 20% range.
That's a lot of interest.
Makes sense.
It's a teenage interest.
Yeah. It's a teenage interest, young adult interest.
A young adult interest.
Yeah. All right. So there are also some cons to this, right? And we're thinking specifically about travel cards. And for us, we love travel. I'm sure many of you do. Here's the con to it, though. Unfortunately, you don't have full access to buy whatever you want, fly or travel or stay whenever you want. Oftentimes when you're using credit card rewards points, there's always some little thing that does not allow you to fully maximize. And I shouldn't say always, but in a lot of cases, there's going to be some type of stipulation that restricts your ability to fully make a purchase as if you were just using cash. So we've had our own experience with this where let's say we wanted to travel somewhere and if we wanted to use points, we could go, but we couldn't fly and sit next to each other, or we couldn't get the seats or the rows that we wanted. I'm about 6'1". I need a little bit of space. So for me, that tended to be a little bit of a hiccup. In some cases, Kirsten would be, you know, way in the front because she was able to get preferred seating and I would be way in the back. Or let's just say we've had our fair share of staying in hotels that are conveniently located to the elevator. So every time you hear that little ding, it's, you know, you're trying to sleep and you're just hearing the ding, or someone getting ice at the ice machine. Like those are the rooms that are generally going to be available for you for free using your credit card rewards points. So you can go, you can travel, you can stay in these hotels, but more often than not, you're not going to have as much choice as you would have if you were paying with cash.
I'll say that another pro is that points hacking is a great way to buy gifts for your partner that you don't want to show up on a credit card statement or your checking account, or you can use it for gifts and gift cards for yourself. Wait, I'm kind of revealing all my secrets, but like,
yeah, I'm like taking notes here.
The rewards mall on cards can be a really nice place to kind of offset some of those unexpected one-off expenses that you have for, you know, Mother's Day, Kirsten's birthday, Christmas, you know, the basics.
Those are some great examples. It's not very specific. All right, let's roll through a couple more examples. And this is a big one in terms of a con, unfortunately. This is really the devaluation of points. And what that means is while you can consider these points or miles a form of currency, unfortunately, these companies or the managers of those programs have the ability to adjust the value of each of those points pretty much whenever they want to. they're a for-profit business. As much as they want to keep you happy, they're not going to do it to the extent that it isn't profitable for them. And so that's certainly something to be mindful of. And we've experienced that on several levels. We've seen it, we've done it, we've experienced it. So I think back to when we went to Thailand. I think that was 2013. That was the second big trip we've taken, I think. Let's just call it the second. Don't correct me. Okay. I don't remember. It was an early trip. And I remember before we went, when we first started identifying how many points it might cost, we got so excited. It was like, all right, this is how much we need. I think it was like 50,000 miles or something like that. And that was, you know, let's just say in January. And then a few more months down the line, when we knew that we were getting ready to book, we looked again and we were all excited because we had enough points and the cost of the flight had mm-hmm. gone up. Yep. So that's not necessarily a devaluation of points, but it is a fluctuation of the value in terms of how you can purchase something using your points. And that can have a negative impact on your experience. We've also done it, right? And so to your point, we've worked for a travel company. And one of the things that I distinctly remember was the year that they rolled out a level above the highest level. And so you spend an entire year, maybe even more, trying to get to whatever this high level of status is. And then the next year, just like, guess what?
You're not the highest anymore.
Not sitting on the throne anymore. Now you are one level below and you've got to travel some more and spend some more in order to reap the full benefits of the program. Those things happen. They upset a lot of people, but we were in the belly of the beast while it was happening. We factored in how many we would lose. And at the end of the day, we knew that we would be okay. And they were right.
Yeah, it's like Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football where she just keeps moving it every time he tries to kick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That can be pretty frustrating. And again, when you start thinking about the degree to which people plan their lives and their spending and their travel around these things, that can be pretty frustrating. And the last one is we've experienced it too. And we've mentioned that a couple of times. We have our fair share of sleeping and spending nights in less than desirable, but free hotel rooms and taking flights that are conveniently located to the bathroom on the flight, but it was free. We've done it. We've been there. All that to say, you just don't have the same kind of choice that you would have if you were just paying with cash.
Right. And I think that's an important point because companies like to exploit this idea of like perceived thrift. Like you keep mentioning that it was free. And technically it wasn't.
It was earned.
And you start to believe after a while, you know, when you're spending so much with a particular card issuer, that you are as deserving of that seat as someone who paid cash because you've earned it.
Yeah, you're making me think of several people in my family who shall remain nameless. If they're listening to this, they'll know exactly who I'm referring to, but they are just nuts about their points. And I found this recent survey. It was done by Bankrate.com, and they found that nearly 70% of adults with credit card debt still try to maximize rewards.
Yes.
I remember being in that 70% for a very short period of time before I got smart and said, you know what, this game is not worthy of playing. But I've been there. I've seen people say, nope, it's okay. It's still worth it. We're going to, you know, stretch out this payment because at the end of the day, we're going to take everyone to a trip to Florida or whatever it is. But yeah, it's a really, really fascinating mindset and game that you're playing that you really just don't have a lot of control. And as we've said, because we've seen it, we've done it, we've been, you know, working at a company that's manipulated these points at the time, you're not really, you know, in a position of advantage here because they can fluctuate those prices or those values at any point in time.
Yeah. And if you ever want to calculate how much your points are worth, you start with the value of the reward and then you divide it by the points that you spent. So if you spent 40,000 points on the equivalent of a $500 item, so it could be a plane ticket or a speaker, whatever it is, you would divide 500 by 40,000 and see that your points are worth roughly 1.2 cents. So you want to check the valuation across the year and across reward partners because it does change. It does vary based on where you're exchanging and when you're exchanging and how many other people want that item.
Yeah, but I would say the house always wins. Yeah,
it's true. It's like poker, man. Like you cannot see what your opponent is holding on their end. You are making a bet that, you know, you've got them fooled, but
I can tell you've never played poker.
I know,
before.
I'm not. I'm not great with the the poker metaphor.
Yeah, I could tell.
What did I get wrong?
We'll talk about that in a minute. All right. So, how about some final thoughts?
Final thoughts. So, as a recovering point hacker, maybe I shouldn't say recovering point hacker. I should say part-time point hacker. It's important to remember that the points are accrued passively in the background. So it feels like you're not really doing anything to earn these, and it just feels like a reward. But the card products are actively managed by the banks and the card issuers. It is someone's full-time job to make sure that those numbers map up. So if you want to win at that game, you have to invest time regularly. You have to constantly be pulling out your calculator and figuring out point valuations. The Points Guy is a great website where he actually posts monthly valuations of airline currency, I think across 45 cards or something like that. But it's going to require your energy, even though those points are being earned kind of passively and you're not really thinking about it. Like, there's still some work to be done.
Yeah, I think it's easy for people to feel like they're missing out because there's always going to be someone, you know, posting a picture from being in Hawaii and saying, oh, I didn't even pay for this flight, or I didn't even pay for this room. I mean, you did. You traveled 60% of the year, or you spent a lot on groceries or on gas or whatever it is to earn, not be granted or given. In some cases, you might be given a little bonus, but you get my point. It's earned. It's a lot of work. And that's really my bottom line. I know we like to glamorize how lucrative this can be, but it is a lot of work. The people that we know that are doing this and doing it well, they've got spreadsheets, they've got calculators, they've got software to help them manage multiple passwords on multiple credit cards, and in some cases, multiple credit cards for multiple accounts or partners. Like, it is a full-time job, and they really build and design their lives around that. If you're going to do that, I hope it's worth it. And for us, you know, I'd rather spend my time doing other things. And so it's something to be mindful of. Personally, we're all about cash back credit cards. They're simple. There are no bells, no whistles, no annual fees, and no fancy rewards programs. You simply pay in full every month. You write off a few little things throughout the year, and you call it a day.
And the best part is the cash that you earn on cash back credit cards is tax free. Well, that's that.
All right. So are you still a recovering, what did you call yourself? A recovering point hacker?
Sounded I said part-time.
Like a form of addiction.
Part-time point hacker.
Part-time point hacker.
Yes.
Okay. I like that. I accept that.
Yes.
Perfect. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you like what you heard, let us know by leaving a 5-star rating and review.